So welcome back to another week of Learning our Orchid Tzaddikim. This is our seventh cheer. We are moving along. We are in the 11th and 12th chapters, Perek Yud Aleph and Yud Beis of Orchid Tzaddikim, learning about Charata and Kaas, which is remorse or regret and anger. And we'll spend a little bit of time on Charata, but a lot more time on Kaas, appropriately so. If anyone's familiar with the Orchos, not with the Orchos Tzaddikim, that's what we're learning, with the Igaras Ramban, and this is the cute English version. Yeah, I feel like everyone has this. This is like one of those like go-tos as soon as you get to a yeshiva or seminary in Israel, assuming there's no lockdowns, then you run to whatever local bookstore and you get the article Igaras Ramban. And so you've probably seen the story, but still it's worth sharing. We're really introducing anger more than we are regret, but they all fit together. And the Ramban, at the end of his life, when he was 72 years old, arrives in Eretz Yisrael, and from Akko, he sends a letter to his son, who was also named Nachman. Rav Moshe ben Nachman named his son Lechora after his father. And he sends him, all the most essential life lessons. Now, it's important to notice that he's sending a letter to his son. His son, if the Ramban is 72, his son's not like 12. His son's like a real person. And still, these are important life lessons at even an advanced age. And he encourages son to read this letter all the time. It's got all really the most fundamental lessons. We'll quote it a little bit later on. But he starts out the letter saying, be very, very careful not to get angry. Kaas is a very, very bad thing. And as always, we're looking at two sort of extremes, two paradigms, two sides of the same coin. That's how our Sefer works. And so appreciating that the Ramban's number one message that he wants to share with his son is to stay away from anger, that sort of frames what we're working on today. But before we get to anger, we have to talk about regret. We have to talk about charata. Now, charata could be anger, it could be remorse. If at any point in time it is too hard to hear me because there is an adorable but highly vocal young boy sitting next to me, then just let me know. But for the time being, I think we're okay. He's not so vocal just yet. And actually, even though it looks like I just included the little anger snippet from Inside Out because it fit last week and I was continuing, actually, I think that this little message, this description, will help be helpful in a few minutes. But first, let's begin. Again, as usual, Poskim L'Chvodak Sanya, we want to thank Neely and Mrs. Emma Katz for allowing this to happen, even though the Levin Sins aren't our hosts right now because we're over Zoom. One day, Mirtz Hashem will be back there. And so thank you so much to them for making this all happen. And we're using the Sefaria version of Orchos Tzaddikim just because it's easiest to follow. So right in the very beginning, talking about charata, or about remorse, or about regret. Hu she'adam osa davar, v'chozer misnachem ala maisa. Person does something and they said, oh no, that was a mistake, I should not have done that. V'hu derek yishar ma'od le'inyan ha'tshuva. And that's it's an essential step to tshuva. Someone who regrets, if we truly regret our sins, it's as if we never sinned in the first place. But let's think about this for just a moment. When I think about regret, when I think about charata, I don't necessarily associate that with a positive midah. Is that fair to say? It doesn't have that like same warm feel. We talk about love. That's a good feel. We talk about patience. Patient anava, those are like the positive side of the coin. Charata is like an interesting thing for us to be the inverse. And what we're going to try and appreciate even more is, how is charata the inverse of kaas? How do those two things fit together? We talked about simcha last week, simcha and daga. I would have put simcha versus kaas, not simcha versus daga, worry. And so how does all this seem to fit in? And truth be told, at a certain point in time, toward the end of the Sefer, our author stops breaking from the quote-unquote good-bad midah, even though, of course, our theme is always that no midah is good or bad, it's always a measurement. But that hasn't happened here. So what is regret versus what is anger? And so one of the cool things that you get to do when you're in the YU Torah Mitzion Kolo is you come up with programs, and then you get to run programs, unless Rabbi Brand wants to do it more than you do. And so I had this idea over the summer that we would do a Psychology of Tshuva series. And, we have access to these world-renowned psychologists from the privacy of their homes because no one's traveling. And so it's not that hard to, get in touch with them. And so leading up to Yom Narayim, I interviewed Dr. Pelkovitz and Dr. Blumenthal, who quite literally are the two top psychologists in the Jewish world. And I don't just mean, in the YU Orthodox world. I mean in the Jewish world at large, whenever something big is going on. Sorry. whenever something big is going on, their phones are always ringing. And so I interviewed both of them. They're on YouTube and they're on YU Torah. Dr. Pelkovitz's was featured and got like 250 hits. And that was my contribution to Am Yisrael, that a lot of people learned about tshuva through him, Baruch Hashem. But in my conversation with Dr. Blumenthal, I asked them a lot of the same questions. But I recommend looking back on it, for sure, leading up to the Yom Nirayim, because they're just both wonderful. And I asked him about this. You know, I asked him about what's a healthy way of looking at our sins, looking at ourselves. It almost seems like charata is a bad thing. Charata is a negative quality. And what he pointed out, which was so insightful and so up his alley, is that on the one hand, yes, charata is a negative thing, because charata is pain. And Yom Kippur, we actually experience pain. We put ourselves in pain. We don't eat, we don't drink. The Torah literally calls it inoy. This is all him. And yet that's what's going to lead us to change, that the only people who end up making a change in their lives are people who have been in some level of pain. And so charata is an openness to pain, but he added another level, which is what brings us here. He says that it takes a certain kind of person to be able to look at themselves critically. Not everyone can have charata. Not everyone can regret. People talk about wanting to live with no regrets. On the one hand, it's good to not look back. It's a healthy way to see everything as being productive and contributing to who you are today. But at the same time, there are some people who try to live without regrets because it's too hard to think, oh, I really messed up. That was a bad thing to do. I shouldn't have done that. And sometimes we're so uncomfortable with ourselves that we're not willing to. So charata, instead of being a positive mita, charata we could look at maybe as being the result of a very healthy sense of self. If I'm really strong enough within myself, then I can have charata. And that's why I think we can look at it as a positive. When we contrast that with anger, someone who's got a healthy sense of self and something happens in their lives that doesn't go well, oftentimes they'll say, well, what did I do wrong? What could I have done differently next time? Someone who's not so healthy might not look at it that way. They might say, what did someone else do wrong? What did you do wrong? You know, when something goes wrong in a relationship, people with a healthy sense of self will say, I messed up. I have to make sure to do better next time. It might even be that my spouse, my friend, my family member was the one who was having a bad day, and it was their quote-unquote fault. They're the ones who started it. But someone with a healthy sense of self, someone with the midah of charata, is able to look and say, okay, next time someone I care about is in a difficult situation, someone I care about comes home very, very upset, instead of maybe expecting them to relegate themselves, what can I do to make sure that I fix the situation next time around? An angry person is always going to look externally and expect someone else to take care of it for them. Maybe that's one way for us to look at two sides of this midah, charata and kaas. Clear? Shira's not yelling at me. We're all good. All right. So now we'll move on. And we're just going to point out a couple, these are important things to recognize. That healthy charata, and charata is something we're doing all the time on a constant basis, that we're always trying to look back and see how I could have done better, how I could have been better. But charata has to start after you're done sinning. You can't be osik in sinning and it's not called charata then. You could feel bad about the fact that you're eating treif. We like to use extreme examples that don't apply, because if we used ones that are too close to home, people would get uncomfortable. So you can feel badly about the fact that you're eating treif, but if you're still doing it, you're still doing it. The question is, can you, once you're done with that, can you feel charata and say, I'm not going to do it again? And part of it is maybe when we're looking back, how do we feel about that? How do we feel about the things that we've done? And Adam Grant had a great tweet, actually. I think it was just this past week. I happen to have seen it. We talked about Adam Grant a little bit last week. He's like one of the leading industrial organizational psychologists in the world. He's a top-rated professor at Wharton. He's an author. He's the man. We're big fans. And he's got a great quote. He says, he quotes like this, he tweets like this all the time. He says, feeling embarrassed by your old work isn't a sign of incompetence. It's a mark of growth. Being critical of your past performances means you've raised your standards, refined your taste, or improved your judgment. It's a path to producing something better in the future. We're not going to get better unless we have charata, and in some ways, feeling charata for what we've done is an indication that I'm better than I once was. One of my rabbis, Rabbi Kenny Hirshhorn, is a rabbi in Netivarieh. He likes to tell the story about how, at the end of the year, Netivarieh is an interesting yeshiva, because on the one hand, you get Very serious boys. It's a very, very rigorous program. You're in yeshiva for many, many hours a day. But some of the guys who come in the beginning of the year are not exactly the holiest Jews. And Baruch Hashem, through being in yeshiva, like many, many places, they grow a lot and they become much more sensitive and much more connected to Torah mitzvos. And hopefully I don't get in trouble for telling another Nativ story. But at the end of the year, Nativ always goes on a trip, and this trip happened to have them rafting down a river. And one year, the way things worked out, along the river, there was a group of people, of local Israelis hanging out. They were not necessarily very good at getting dressed. I guess they didn't have a lot of money. They couldn't afford so much clothing. It was very unfortunate. And the yeshiva boys, these like Shana Aleph guys, who came from insert whatever modern Orthodox high school you want to insert, who they're there and they're like freaking out and they're like hiding and they're ducking and they're complaining to Rav Hirshhorn and Rav Hirshhorn, how can the yeshiva take us on this trip? This is so awful. This is so terrible. What's going on? How can they do this to like good yeshiva bachurim? And Rav Hirshhorn's laughing. He's like, I remember you guys 10 months ago. 10 months ago, you guys would have been taking pictures. You would have been all excited. You would have introduced yourselves, try to get their numbers. Like, and now, like, you're all freaking out. Sometimes the charata of, I can't believe that's where I was, is an indication of where you've grown, how much you've progressed. And so it's good to have charata. Charata means that you're doing well. And that's what Adam Grant's pointing out. But there's a charata that can be very, very dangerous. Charata can be a negative. And the Orchot Tzadikim gives a great shot. He doesn't explain it essentially based on the on this bracha, but it's what we say in Maariv. In Maariv, we say in the bracha of Hashkiveinu, which is amongst my favorite tfilos that we say all day. So I'm not going to read through the whole tefillah, but we say toward the end, "V'haser Satan milfaneinu me'acharenu," and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please remove the Satan before us and after us. Now we can appreciate, why would you want to remove the Satan from in front of us? That Satan in front of us is the Satan telling us, don't have a Maariv tonight, you don't need to. It's the Satan telling us, nah, you can say that thing, it's not a big deal, like, yeah, it's not really Lashon Hara. The Satan in front of us is the one telling us that we can eat that, and we can think that, and we don't have to do that, or we should do that. But Me'acharenu, the Satan behind it, what's the Satan doing behind me? So, the Orchot Tzadikim explains, and he says which really explains our tefillah, in paragraph 5, page 2. About ha'osa tovu miskaret. What happens when I do a mitzvah and then I regret it? Zos midara. That's a bad kind of harata. I worked really, really hard and I did a mitzvah. And maybe it didn't work out the way that I thought it was going to. Maybe I didn't get the kind of kavod I was supposed to, because we tried working on kavod, but we didn't do so good. Well, we appreciate it. We did a chesed and we tried doing it. We got up early and we traveled a lot, but it didn't pan out the way that we expected. Maybe it wasn't even totally necessary. I don't know if you've ever volunteered somewhere and you show up and there's like so many people who volunteered and you just think, I don't actually have to be here. They don't really need me. And maybe you're miskaret that I could have done something else. I didn't have to be doing this mitzvah. That's karata for a positive thing that I've done. V'lachein, continuing, tzarek shetizar shelo tiskaret al tovus. You should never ever regret a good thing that you did. Shelo te'evad skarcha. Your reward is never going to go away. The positive impact of that mitzvah is not going to disappear. Were you able to accomplish the goal that you wanted to? Maybe not. But that mitzvah still lasts. The fact that you tried to, the effort that you put in, that still sustains. And the tefillah that we want to remove the satan, milfaneinu, we can appreciate, umeyacharenu, we never want to regret the mitzvahs that we did. We never want to do a mitzvah, we don't want to make a bracha with a lot of kavanah and then have someone laugh at us, chalila. I was talking to someone this morning about that. We learned Alei Shor. And it's not so easy for everyone to do mitzvot. Do mitzvot in public. When you're surrounded by your friends in Jewish environments, and hopefully it's a warm environment to make brachos. But when you're like in public, when you're at work, and you whisper a bracha right before you put food in your mouth, you could do that. But you might decide that you want to make a real bracha. You want to close your eyes. You want to focus for a moment. And if someone asks you a question, someone thinks it's weird. Okay, but Chalila, if someone should make an unusual comment, and you feel bad that you did a mitzvah, that should never happen. But we daven every single night. V'haser Satan l'faneinu u'me'acharenu. I don't want to regret anything that I've done, anything positive that I've done. Moving on to another element of charata. Sometimes we'll have charata for an action. Sometimes we'll have charata for a commitment that we make, and that's something that the Orchot Tzadikim entertains in paragraphs 6 and 7. I have a very clear recollection. I was talking to Rabbi David Beshefkin. There was a project that I took on, and at one point, I was like, I'm not so sure, like, I'm going to be able to do this. And he's like, why not? I'm like, well, I have to do this, I have to do that, I have to do that. And he goes, well, those things are important. I'm like, yeah, they're important. That's why I might not be able to do this project you and I discussed. And he said, but are they more important than your word? What do you mean? And he says, well, you gave your word you were going to get this done, right? Like, yeah. He goes, well, is that more, are these other things that you want to be doing, you're trying to do, more important than your word? And he shared that Moish Bain, who's now the president of the OU, but used to just be like a neighbor or a family friend of Rabbi Beshefkin, or I guess David Beshefkin, back then, as he said that, you know, your word is one of the most important things that you have. Now, Yesh Ladun, if that's really the case, but the Orchos Tzadikim definitely zooms in on that to some extent. And he talks about that if someone's regretting, it's one thing, but if someone regrets to the extent that they throw away their commitments, that they were planning on doing something, decide not to do it, then like, how valuable is that? And you're looking at paragraph Vav, Hamid Hazos Meguna Ma'od Eitzel Ha'olam, Kishein Adam Kayim Benyan Shalom. When someone's not reliable, that's a real problem in the world. Kishu Omer Hayom Davar. When on one day I say this, when we scar it in the mocker, but the next day I pull back, I regret, I don't keep my word. The Eino Omeid Bidibur, and I don't stand by what I said. I literally don't keep my word. Kishu No Der Lisanos, when I say I'm going to fast, O Lasset Tztaka, I'm going to give Tztaka, O Lilmo Torah Miskaret, Shezera, and I say I'm going to learn, I'm going to do Mishnayos for someone Shloshim. I don't know how frequently that comes up, but unfortunately it happens to a lot of people, commit to giving Tztaka, it doesn't always work out, whether because they don't have the means they thought they did, or I know sometimes people just make commitments they can't keep. But we see in our own lives, we'll use an example that probably doesn't apply to the Skavra so that we can transfer it to one that hopefully does apply, so that we're not speaking to deaf ears. I have a very clear recollection. Just over a year ago, Daf Yomi was finishing and then starting again. And there were all these shirim, I'm sure that Atara listened to all of them, they were geschmack, about all these different rabbis who do or don't do Daf Yomi, talking about why someone should or should not be doing Daf Yomi. And one thing that Ephraim Goldberg pointed out was that Daf Yomi is a 7.5-year commitment. That's a very long time. He said, think about it, without question, over the next 7 years, you're going to have weddings, you're going to have funerals, you're going to have bar mitzvahs, you're going to have sicknesses, and you're going to have to do a daf of Gemara every single one of those days. Are you really ready to make that commitment? Can you do that right now in your life? And it doesn't need to be Daf Yomi. There was a period of time where my wife wanted to say Nishmat for 40 days. And I really, really remember that we were like driving in the car. I think it was like 7 minutes before Shkia. And she's like, oh my gosh, what time is Shkia? I have to say Nishmat today. And she hadn't been able to get to it until then. She was working, she was doing whatever it was. And it's not easy saying Nishmat every single day for 40 days. And any commitment that we're going to make, the Orchos Tzadikim encourages us to be thoughtful about it. He said, looking here in the bold, in paragraph Zion, Zuhi Takas Hatov. The best option, really, is Sheyashiv Benasho, V'yivar HaMinag V'amidos Hatovos. Figure out what are the good things out there. What are the positive things I can take on? Maybe I want to do, probably don't want to do Daf Yomi. Maybe I want to say Nishman every day. Maybe I want to daven every day because I'm not davening well. Maybe I want to have a Caruso every day or once a week. I want to do this. I want to volunteer there. I want to participate in mitzvah X, Y, or Z on a regular basis. I want to commit to that. And so I figure out all those different things. Wilhanig Navshopen, and I want to do them. V'yakshov, so think. I'll call Mashiach and think about what I'm doing. Im Yako Lamo Modbo, am I going to be able to do this? Az Yatzvispo, then commit to it. But don't commit to it before you really know you can take it on. Because if you only take something on when you really know that you can do it, then that's going to be a strong commitment. But if you're always committing to things, then like none of them are that strong. Now, we'll give a caveat, because beautiful story. I am for sure one of these people that is like always taking on something else. We're currently in my own little base medrash, and we're not going to go through a whole tour of the various svarim, but I'll just tell you that, like, you know, there's like Parsha stuff, there's my Gemara Halakha stuff, and this shelf over here is sort of like not to say the highlights, but it's a little bit the highlights. It's the svarim that, like, I'm quote-unquote currently learning. There's about 35 svarim over here. I'm not currently learning 35 svarim. These are all the svarim that, like, I was like, oh, I'm going to start learning this. And I did, but it didn't really pan out. And I for sure have committed to things and wanted to do things and not worked out. But there's a beautiful story I heard that encouraged me because I'm just as guilty as many people as committing to things and not really following through. That one time a chassid went to his Rebbe and he says, Rebbe, I feel like I'm always starting new projects. I feel like I'm always trying to do new things and it never seems to work out. I feel like I'm just like a Baal HaShe'ifos, but with nothing to show for it. I'm just like trying to do things, but not actually doing things. And the Rebbe told his chassid, he says, if I was one day walking in the Beis HaKfar, so I was walking in the cemetery, and I saw a tombstone that said, Kan Nitman Baal She'ifos, someone with great, great desires, someone who really wanted to accomplish in his life, was buried here, without mentioning anything they accomplished, I would daven at that grave. I would daven there because that is someone worthwhile. It's worthwhile. It's awesome to want to do things, to take on new projects. But the best way to take on a new project is to plan out beforehand, well, what's going to happen? Am I really going to be able to accomplish this? You know, I'm starting in the summer. Am I going to be able to continue that throughout the year? Baruch Hashem, there are plenty of opportunities to make a mistake and start again. I actually remember, for those of us who are still in structured Jewish environments, Rabbi Penner, Menachem Penner, I spoke, it must have been early on when I was in YU, about one of the, how YU is hard. That being in a dual learning environment is not easy. He says, but life is also hard, and living a dual life is also challenging. Being unorthodox is not as easy as some other approaches to Yiddishkeit. And he says, but here, when you're in the confines of Yeshiva University and the Kosle based Medrash, I think the way he said it, you can make a mistake. You can mess up, and you can come back and try again. And I definitely experienced that where, you know, I took on things, I tried to do things, and it didn't work out, but I had a foundation, I had a grounding in my college and yeshiva that was structured for me so that I could try again and I could test out, is this something I could take on for real? Is this something that I could try? You know, maybe I want to daven vasikin every day. And, you know, so we can try that. I never really thought I would daven vasikin every day early, but there are for sure guys who do. And it was a chance for me to test things out and then, all right, fail, we'll try again. But whether you're taking on something, it's worthwhile to think ahead. And am I going to be able to keep this up? On sort of the flip side of that, when we think ahead about, you know, what we're trying to accomplish, what we want to do, it's also worthwhile to... No, you know, I think we'll leave it at that because we're already pressed for time. Naturally, I think we always start out later than we should and then we're always pressed for time. I can't help it. And so... Charetz is an important thing to know that one day I might regret this. And before going into any activity, am I going to regret this? Maybe it's about a positive commitment that I'm making. Hopefully that's the time where I'm thinking, will I regret this? But Chas HaShalom, if we're in a situation, maybe we have to always think, is this something I'm about to do? Is this an environment that I'm in that one day I'll regret? Am I saying something, doing something, being someone that one day I'll have to look back on and say, I'm not happy about that. I'm not proud of it. And not because, like Adam Grant, that I've grown, but that even like tomorrow, I'm not going to be so excited. I'm not going to be so proud. And maybe that's a little bit what the Ramban is alluding to in his Igeres. He says, "Kasher takum in a sefer techafish ba'asher lamata im yesh bo davar asher tuchal lekaimo." That's unrelated to what we're talking about, but a worthwhile lesson nonetheless. That when you stop learning something, you should think, you know, what from what I learned just now can I actually apply to my life? We try to review what we learned, but it's worthwhile for all of us to actually think, you know, what of what we learned in this hour on Sunday nights can I actually, you know, take with me? That's the first thing Ramban says. And then the reason why we quoted this, he says, "Tefashvich b'masecha boker uva'erev uvezei yu kol yemecha b'tshuva." That every morning, and at the very least every night, we should think back. You know, how was my day? Am I proud of the way that I spent my day? In Kriyat Shema Shalamita, we're like kind of doing tshuva. That's part of what's going on if you look at all... what we're saying in those various paragraphs. And the whole idea of Kriyat Shema Shalamita is that I go to sleep with Divrei Torah in my mouth and that I go to sleep thinking about a Kaddish Baruch Hu. So what happens if you say Kriyat Shema Shalamita and then you don't fall asleep? Well, that's the perfect time for you to think about your day. That's the perfect time for you to reflect and for you to be able to genuinely think, well, if I could go back and do it again, is this what my day would have looked like? How would I have done it differently? And Kriyat Shema Shalamita, that nighttime, when you're laying in bed and it's dark and there's nothing else for you to be doing, that's the perfect time for you to practice this karatamida of, can I do better next time? And that's more or less what he's alluding to in paragraph Yud Aleph, and that sort of closes our discussion about regret. We'll throw in one more thing from Rabbi Greenland, Chicago local, and international director of NCSY. I heard him speak during Asaras Mechuva that hypocrisy gets a bad rap. And sometimes it's good to be a hypocrite. Sometimes it's good to say, you know what, I didn't used to be that good at this, but now I'm going to be hypocritical. Now I'm going to do it. And that's just another thought about karata, that sometimes we can use karata in the positive sense, that I can be better. I will be better. And that's okay. You're allowed to be hypocritical if it means that you're growing in your avodas Hashem, if you're growing in Torah mitzvos. Not to worry. It's nothing to fear. And now we get to kaas. Now we get to the flip side of karata, because if we're not willing to look critically at ourselves, it's not going to end well. And we mentioned that kaas is the way the Ramban opens up his higeres to his son, the most important lesson he wants to share with him. But kaas is not just something that the Ramban feels strongly about. Kaas is actually one of the ways we describe HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We call HaKadosh Baruch Hu Erech HaPayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu slow to anger. It's one of the Yogil Midas HaRachamim. And now we're going to look at the Rambam. The Rambam basically says like 10 of the paragraphs that in our Sefer, and so we'll look at it here. It's a little bit faster, and the online version has nekudos. So the Rambam in Hilchos Deos, Perek Beis, Halakha Gimel, tells us, Yesh Deos She'asur Lo La'adam Linhog Bevenonis. The first parak talks about how a person needs to find a shvil hazav. They need to find the middle ground, a golden mean. They need to balance themselves and not be too much this or too little that. They have to try and find some middle place, a seesaw. And that's sort of the framework of this sefer that we've been learning. But there are a few things that aren't supposed to seesaw, a few things that are supposed to be in the extreme. Stay away from one extreme and be very, very far in this extreme. For this midah, the first midah he talks about is gaiva / anava. You should be very, very humble. And then he says v'chein kas, so too anger. Midah rahi, next line, ad lima'od. It's a very, very bad midah. V'ra'ui la'adam she'yisrakak menu ad hakatsa acher. Stay far away from it. You want to be on the extreme of anger, of being very, very little anger in your life. V'yi lamed atzmo shelo yichos. And you should learn to not get upset. Even something that you really could or should, you have every right to get upset about. What happens? We talked about the story with Rabbi Bader, I believe, where I was visiting my Rebbe Erev Shabbos and his kids jumping on him. Can I get nods if we remember the story? Yeah, is that a yes? Or should we tell it again? All right, we'll tell it quickly. I'm visiting Rabbi Donny Bader, Rebbe Nitzavaria, and I'm there Erev Shabbos, and the regular Erev Shabbos excitement's going on, and one of his kids is jumping on the other kid. And so Rabbi Bader says, Shalom, stop jumping on your brother. Shalom keeps jumping. Shalom, stop jumping on your brother. Shalom keeps jumping. Shalom, stop jumping on your brother. Shalom keeps jumping. And then Rabbi Bader, who, he's a big guy, he can really project, he yells, Shalom, stop jumping on your brother! And then immediately turns his head to me with a big smile on his face. And he tells me, I'm not mad, but sometimes you have to yell to get them to listen. And that moment stuck with me, and I only later realized that he was literally living the Rambam, because he wasn't upset. There was no anger in his heart, but he was still had to get his kids to listen. So sometimes you have to yell at your kids. Sometimes you need to express anger, whether it's you know, extreme disgust, whether it's actual yelling, depending on the situation. Im rata lahatil ema albanav, uvene veso, o ala tzibor, im hu parnes. If you need to impress upon people, whether it's your children, whether it's people in the community, rata lichos alam, and you want to get angry at them, kidei shiyaksu lemutav, so that they do the right thing, yira atzmo mo bifneim shehu koes, you should appear to be angry, kidei liyasram, so that you can warn them, you should look angry. You should act angry. But in your heart, you shouldn't be angry. Don't actually, genuinely get upset. And Chazal tell us, because if you do get upset, it's as if you're worshiping Avodah Zarah. Now, let's break this down for just a minute, because you can't just throw out a line like that and then like pretend and then just move on. How, in what way, shape, or form is getting upset, just letting letting my blood boil a little bit, like worshiping Avodah Zarah, I have to bow down to an idol. You know, there's a whole process involved. I'm not worshiping Yashki. I'm not crossing myself. Why is anger and getting upset like worshiping Avodah Zarah? Should we throw it out to the crew? Or... okay. Well, let's think about it like this. Last week, we talked about this story from Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev. That he's walking, and he stops, and he tells his chassidim, if I was a Kadosh Baruch Hu, you know what I would do right now? Exactly what a Kadosh Baruch Hu is doing. I'm not smarter than he is. But why am I getting angry? What's causing this anger to build up inside me? It seemingly, it's because there's some injustice being done. And now we actually jump all the way to the very beginning to our description of the emotion anger from inside out. It's the best description that we have. So anger tries to keep us cool, but it's difficult when there's so much rampant injustice in the world. He is quick to overreact which results in rash decision making and rude remarks. Ever since Riley turned, he's been fighting for the good fight, organizing tantrums for the important causes such as car seat liberation, nap eradication, and more cookies. It's a tough job, but someone's got to do it. All of anger's impatience and impulsiveness ensures that all is fair in Riley's life. Now, as cute as a description as that is, that's basically why people get angry. Because there's some injustice being done, because the world is not operating the way that I think it should. And so if the world's not operating the way that I think it should, and I get upset about it, then in some ways what I'm basically saying is that God's messing up. God's doing it wrong here. So I need to be upset because God's clearly not taking care of it, so someone has to. If God's taking care of it, and if God patted me on the shoulder and said, I know this doesn't look so good, but don't worry, I've got your back, I'm going to take care of it, I don't think I'd get so upset. But if I'm convinced that God's actually not watching, that God's out to lunch, he's distracted, then, Chalila, then I would get upset. And maybe that's why it's like worshiping idols. It's literally like saying a Kadosh Baruch Hu is not in full control. Now, continuing in the Rambam, Ve'amru kolakoes, if someone's wise, they end up losing all of their wisdom. And if he's Navi, he no longer can get Nevuah. They don't really live life. And if part of life is recognizing that God's in control and that I'm not, then getting angry is the exact opposite. It's saying, I can control my life. If you think that you're in control of your life, then you're not really going to be living. You're not really going to be enjoying your life. And so maybe that's shot in later on in the Rambam. You should not get upset even at things that seemingly should get you upset. Vizuhi darka tova. And that's the proper way to act, and we're going to leave it at there. And so we got the framework, we got the general idea of how we're supposed to act with chaos, and now we're going to sort of examine how chaos works. And when someone does get angry, what's going on? What might be motivating it, but foremost, why is it so bad? We see this Gemara in Erevin at the very top of Samach Hey Amud Beis. We have a nice little excerpt that Amar Rabbi Eli B'shloshet Dvarim Adam Nicker. We see the Yisod of someone. We see a real person in three different ways. This comes up a lot around Purim time because we say Bikoso, Bikiso, Vikaso. When someone drinks, when someone's consuming alcohol, as we lightly alluded to last week, you see the foundation of who they are. Rabbi Ari Kahn pointed out that... actually, he might have been quoting Rav Moshe Shapiro. I think he was quoting Rav Moshe Shapiro, Zichrono Livracha, if the inside of you is coming out when you're drinking, then until you're 40, there's not really anything worthwhile to come out, so don't even bother. Don't bother drinking on Purim. Uvikiso, what someone spends their money on, we see that when they're losing money. That's often a strong indication of who they are. Uvikaso, and in their anger. And maybe also Bisachako. And we talked about laughter last week. The laughter is sort of revealing a little bit about who you are. And the one that we're focusing on is chaos. So in what way do we see a real person in their chaos? Let's look at Rashi in the top left corner. It's the last wide line. She'enu kapdan yosim yidai. That a person is not overly upset, overly angry. And so let's just think about this for a moment. We were told that you're supposed to go to an extreme for anger. You're not supposed to get angry ever. And yet we're told that a person is recognizable in their chaos when they get angry. And so am I never ever supposed to be angry, or am I just not supposed to get angry too much? And we can add a little bit more to it, because it can't just be that you never ever get upset. I don't buy it, in part, mostly because if we look at the description of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, how do we describe a Kodesh Baruch Hu? We say Erech Apayim. Erech Apayim means God is slow to anger, which means that even a Kodesh Baruch Hu, quote-unquote, gets angry. But is a Kodesh Baruch Hu getting angry the same way that Bnei Adam get angry? When we describe a Kodesh Baruch Hu be upset, why is a Kodesh Baruch Hu ever upset? Seemingly, it's because Am Yisrael needs to see a Kodesh Baruch Hu upset. And so, maybe instead of someone's kaas being, oh, I'm in control of myself. The Gemara is like, if the Gemara is talking about people who aren't such mention, then like, what are we accomplishing here? Yeah, you really, really see a person when he's drinking. Yeah, okay, you know, if he's not such a mensch in his general life, then okay, when he's drunk, he's not going to be a mensch either. But we're talking about, you know, a person is really nikar. You can really appreciate who someone is when they're participating in these activities. So maybe it's not, we're not talking about a low-level individual. We're talking about someone who's very holy. And someone who's very, very holy, you can really see them once they've consumed alcohol. You can really see how they spend their money. Rav David Feinstein's Zichron Levracha felt so strongly about Art Scroll being on the scene, about Art Scroll spreading Torah to the non-Hebrew speaking and reading audience, that he literally donated his life savings, $25,000, for like a Rosh Hashiva, to Art Scroll when that Art Scroll needed help. Because Bekiso, when he gave up his money for something he felt so passionately about. And I wonder if we can suggest that the Gemara means that you see a person Bekaso in their anger, not necessarily about what they genuinely get upset about, because our high level is, we know that we want to avoid getting angry. But maybe it's what they show their anger about, that you're supposed to pretend like you're upset at certain times, like the Rambam explained. So maybe it's what a person decides, what a person elects to show their anger in. Do you decide that you want me to pretend, you need to show anger in this situation or that situation? Are you getting upset about Chilul Hashem? Are you getting upset about Ziyaf HaTorah? Are you getting upset about little things? Are you getting upset? Are you showing that you're upset? You can think about it in the context of a family. Like, do parents show that they're upset when the kids are running late? Maybe they're not genuinely upset, but they want to impress upon their kids to always be on time. Or are parents showing their children they get upset when their kids aren't behaving properly? Do parents get angry at Kavod HaBrios or Midos or Ruchnius? Or are they presenting anger, even if it's not genuine anger and they're not really feeling it, like when a kid is being like loud in the supermarket? And so what are you presenting your anger in? Maybe that's how we can understand this Gemara. And in the paragraph Yud Zion, our author kind of alludes to it. But that's what we're going to suggest for now. Any questions, any clarity? Am I missing something completely in our Gemara Shira? Okay, all good. I'm being passing Shira too much. She doesn't want to talk anymore. An important thing to think about is that if someone does get angry, whether and we're assuming here that this is genuine anger, not just, you know, the tzaddik-like anger where you're just presenting it, but you're not genuinely feeling it. You got to think about the impact it's going to have on your home and the people around you. If you've got a boss who's always angry, or a colleague who's always angry, a roommate or a parent who's always angry, everyone else is kind of like living in fear. You're kind of like freaking out that you're gonna do something, you're gonna set them off. I don't know if anyone has siblings or if anyone's ever fought with their siblings. I hope that you fought with your siblings. And the reason why is because psychologically, when children aren't fighting with their siblings, it's usually because they have a common enemy. It's usually because if I'm comfortable in my home, then I have the freedom to fight with my brother, with my sister. If I'm not comfortable because mommy or daddy, God forbid, is dangerous, then I'm going to learn to protect my siblings instead. You know, you can think about movies and books and stories about how, you know, siblings fight all the time, but out in public, out in the world, you know, they protect each other because they appreciate that there's the other and there's us. But when I'm safe, when it's just me, then I'll fight with my siblings. But if daddy, God forbid, is an angry person, then we'll band together. We're never going to fight, because we need to protect ourselves from Abba. That's not something you ever want to be in, and so you ever actually want people to fight. And someone who might have a tendency toward anger has to be so thoughtful about the impact it's going to have on their family, and to a lesser extent, you know, to their friends in their workplace. There's another level to it, though, because we're seeing a theme that in every one of our chapters, the Orchot Tzadikim sees that it's so, so important to give tokacha. That tokaka, to give rebuke, to give people feedback and guidance, is an essential in every one of our midos. In every single chapter we've seen, I believe, our author's always gone back to And this way you'll be able to give tokacha. Or if you do this, you won't be able to give tokacha. If you're an angry person, you're not going to be able to have a real conversation with someone. You know, let's read this one inside. In Ka'as, Perek Yud, paragraph Yud. Kol ha'ka'as lo yeheh kakam gadol. You're not going to be very wise. Ki ha'ka'as mavriach milibo ha'kmasa. Your chacham is going to end up leaving you. Shelo yukal la'anos kahugan v'lo yochiyach kahugan. You're not going to be able to have a real conversation. And that's the only way you end up learning anything. V'chol dvarav lo b'haskel. And you're not really going to be thinking clearly. Ha'ka'asam mo'ne'am imenu musar. You're never going to be able to get feedback. If you're angry, no one's going to tell you something you don't want to hear. And if you're, and so you'll create an echo chamber. Everyone's just going to say yes because when you make suggestions, when you ask them their advice, because they don't want you to say anything against them. The Sanhedrin is set up, and the Sanhedrin Agadol, where you had like, you know, the biggest rabbis of our generation. The Sanhedrin was set up that the youngest, the tzair, the smallest of the Dayana would speak first, and gradually until you got to the biggest Dayan. The early Dayana would speak, and then Rabbi Reis would speak at the very end. Why? Because they wanted to make sure that everyone was presenting their opinion. If you're talking to someone and you know that they get upset easily, you're not going to tell them their opinion. If you know someone who gets like super, super riled up about politics, you're just not going to have a political conversation with them. They probably know a lot. These people, hopefully, are very well versed in whatever political discussions they want to have, and you could learn a lot from them. But if they're going to start screaming and yelling, you're just not ever going to start the conversation. And so they're missing out because they could educate you in a very different way if they were just willing to be a little bit more soft-spoken and not freak out so quite so much. Continuing the bold, Kein Adam Rashai Legalos Lo Tayosa V'Darkav Mechuraim. You're not going to be able to express to someone that they're doing poorly. Ki Kol Adam Yefakim Yemenu Lahagid Lo. In Yanav, ki hu yargizalim. You're going to get upset. And like we talked about in Radical Candor, that it's called manipulative insincerity, that you pretend like things are good because it's just not worth anything different. And v'afilu im yochiyach ososhim adam. Even if someone does give feedback, lo yikabu imenu mitol kakas. You're going to get so upset that someone's yelling at you, you're never going to listen. Ke'kalu shel davar in ha'kas ha'mekabal shum mida tova im lo yasu milibu ha'kas. You're never going to be able to grow. You're never going to become that shining individual that we want to be if you're an angry person. Now back in the bold, Kamosh Anakasa Makabo Tokaka Meachirim, Kach Inu Yakol Hokiakas Achirim, Kiator Amra, Hokayak Tokika Samisaka, Velosisa Alavke. That you're supposed to, part of our job in this world is to give people feedback, is to help our friends get better. And if you're an angry person, you can't do that. Now skipping to the end, Ki Chain Derek Bene Adam, this is how people work. Kisha Adam Baal Kaver Bechoska, if someone comes to you with strength in anger and rage, as Chavero Miskasha Kenegdov Lo Yechneya Taktav. If someone's coming at you and they look upset, then parts of your, even if you don't want to, if you want to be open to their feedback, your brain goes into fight or flight mode and you're no longer able to think clearly. V'alze Amar HaKakam Devar HaKakam Benachas Nishmaim. That Devar HaKakam that are said peacefully, softly, those things are heard. There's a book called Crucial Conversations. I'm not going to list all the authors because there are too many of them, but it's this book. And they basically, they're your yesod of the whole book. It's like 180 pages, yeah, 200 pages, about how to have a conversation, a crucial conversation, where potentially things could get heated. Their yesod is make sure you're having a conversation. Make sure it's a two-way street, that everyone's comfortable, that no one's getting worked up. If you can keep calm, that's sort of their first yesod. If you can keep calm and you can make sure everyone else stays calm, then you can have what they call a crucial conversation. But if someone's going to get upset, then you're not really talking anymore, and then it's not going to be productive. It's not going to be helpful. And so it's not helpful. You're not going to accomplish anything. So when it comes to chaos, you have to be very careful internally, and you have to be careful not to anger someone else if you want to get somewhere with them. Now let's think about for a moment, and this is, you know, we have to look at this Mishnah Avos Parakei, Mishnah Yud Aleph, that Rebbe teaches us, Rebbe Huna Nasi says, there are four kinds of chaos, arba midos bedeos, noach likos v'noach lutzos, someone who is easily angered, but they're also easily appeased. Yotzaskar behefsedo. It's great that you're so easygoing, but you also get angry easily, so what have you accomplished? Kasha likos v'kasha lutzos, you don't really get angry very often, but when you do, you're fired up. Okay. Yotzahefsedo beskara. It's not awful, but you haven't really... Your loss has been made up a little bit. When you get angry, it's really bad, but at least you don't get angry very often. still not great. Kashet lichos v'noach lutzos chassid. But if you don't get angry easily and it's easy to appease you, then you're a chassid, you're a pious individual, and we can appreciate noach lichos v'kashet lutzos Russia. If you are easily angered and not easily assuaged from your anger, then you are wicked. We just had to quote that because it's a very, very important lesson from Rebbe. Now, in paragraph Yod Tes, we say, Amar Chacham, Misha Ka'aso b'makshava, Tira Alav HaYashar V'Hadar. Let's say you get upset. What if we're in a situation and I can't help it, I end up getting upset. See if you can hold back. See if maybe you don't need to lash out and go crazy. Misha Ka'aso Alav Shalom b'makshava, Tira Alav HaShtus. And if someone does make you upset, then don't worry about it so much. Maybe you can appreciate that they made a mistake. And this comes up, I think right now none of us are allowed to have roommates, but we can appreciate with our roommates, whether it's family roommates, whether it's school roommates, that the first step anytime I might end up getting upset at a roommate is, well, did they do it on purpose? Did she mean to insult me, bother me, disrupt me in some way, shape, or form? Or maybe it was an accident. That's step one. To always be give benefit of the doubt. Down the kafskos, that's always going to be our first level, our first line of defense to not get upset. And let's appreciate that Vida in Chaf Beis, ki gamar seichel shel adam hu sheyim shel akas. The highest level of a person is to hold back their anger. That, and so when you're confronted with being angry, maybe the thought should be, I want to be awesome. And maybe if I don't get angry right now, I'll be able to be awesome. That is the highest level of a person. And then to the underline, to the squigglies, hakas note me'od ala gaiva. There's a strong connection between kas and gaiva. You're doing this to me? To me? Do you know how chashiv I am? Come on. And so if, let's say I don't worry that much about getting angry, but I worry a lot about gaiva. I don't want to be about gaiva. Then it's worth appreciating, points out the Orchos Tzedikim, that these two are closely related. If you're getting angry, you're probably also a shtokel bal gaiva. And so you can sort of, you can kill two birds with one stone. You can work on your gaiva and your kas by not getting angry in this moment. And then in the bold, at the end of this paragraph, v'chein tzark balakas lasos mitchila kishayala bedaito shelo yichos sorry shelo yargish klal afilu huk of a kolo lo yargish lo yachush. The number one thing is don't worry so much about what people are saying, what people are doing. Don't worry about your own kavod so much. Just don't get involved. The number one step to not get angry is not caring so much, not to get so engaged. But what happens? What happens if I'm upset? Something happened and it made me upset. I'm not perfect. It's okay. I'm still young and I'm getting better. And one day I'm gonna be mascarit. I'm gonna look back and see how much I've grown. But for the time being, I'm not perfect. So I got upset. This is an awesome, awesome, awesome suggestion, an awesome from the Orchos Tzedikim, although expounded upon by Rabbi Michal Brodsky Shlita, who was an Avreich in the Tivarie when I was there. Now he's doing other Tzedikim things, although he's not, unfortunately, for the Tivarie boys in yeshiva anymore. Kishadam shar b'tainis o kishum tzara azakas m'od b'liba. This we'll just introduce because it's a worthwhile paragraph. In Chafalot, he says that if a person's in a difficult situation, they're more prone to getting upset. If I know I'm having a stressful day, then maybe I should be more thoughtful about how I interact with people I care about. You know, when you get home and you're really stressed, it might be worthwhile to just say, I need a few minutes. I need to calm down. Rav Baruch Ber Zatzal, who was a significant Rosh Yeshiva, he knew himself. And he knew that sometimes he got fired up, he got very upset. And so he had a hat. And so there are different kirsos. Either it was he had an angry hat, and the only time he was allowed to get angry was if he was wearing his hat. He didn't always have the hat on him, though, so if he was going to get angry, he had to go get the hat, and by the time he schlepped to get the hat, he wasn't angry anymore. That's one girsa. I don't love that girsa. The other girsa that I like, because I think it's more realistic for us, is that he had an angry hat that he put on, and people knew. Baruch Ber is not in a good mood right now, and so be thoughtful. Like, it doesn't mean don't talk to him, but be thoughtful about the conversation you're about to have. Baruch Ber is saying, I don't want to get angry, so don't come over to me and start badgering me. Don't come over to me and start bringing me bad news. Now is not the time. And maybe we can have some form of an angry hat, like Rav Baruch Ber, letting other people know or let ourselves know that now is just not the time. I'm not going to do stressful, difficult things when I'm not feeling up to it. And then we see in the bold, Lachein yir ha'adam kishaka'aso misgabra alav, that when you're getting upset, sheyishtok or Yudaber Benachas, to just stop speaking or at least speak softly. Lo Yarim Kolo Bekaso, and don't raise your voice. And the Yeres Ramban says you're never supposed to raise your voice. That's a good way to stay away from Kas. But Rabbi Michal Bratsky has an awesome, awesome insight that if you're upset about someone or about something, just don't say anything for 24 hours. I'm so mad at my roommate because they did X, Y, and Z. Don't say it. If giving the silent treatment is going to have a negative effect, then we'll ask a Shiloh, we'll figure it out. But don't bring it up. If you're upset at someone in school that like you're not necessarily going to see today, like just don't talk to them for a day, and like it'll be okay. And then when you and it's a day later, you've had a chance to think about it. You slept on it. Things have moved on. Maybe whatever happened that you thought was really bad has worked out and it hasn't been so bad. Then you can engage in a conversation. Then you can express that they did something that was hurtful to you. But you're not doing it out of this fiery rage. And that's a very, very important life lesson. If you can walk away with just that, I'll be very, very happy. But ultimately, our goal is to be totally removed. Is to be like tzaddikim who don't get so upset, like the Ramban described. So maybe we'll summarize Kaas, that there are really like three levels. You know, this level that we just talked about, which is the base level, is if I do get upset, something happened and I'm upset, we could say hold it in, although that's not really so psychologically healthy, but don't let it burst out right away. At least hold it in for a little bit. Figure out a way to express it in a way that's going to be benachas. Figure out a way to express it in the style of crucial, in a conversation form, where you're not getting heated and they're not getting heated. That's level. That's the base level. We could say level one, level three, depending on how you want to order it. And level two is to not worry so much. Like, don't get so upset about what's going on here, what's going on there. Just live a life where, like, yeah, it'll be okay. Like we said, you know, kol man da'avid rachmana latav avid, it'll all work out. It'll be fine. And if you're not so stressed, you're not so worried about it, then it'll be okay. And you don't need to get upset. And sort of built on that is like what we said about charata. You could, instead of saying, I'm not going to get upset, you could say, well, if I do get upset, am I going to regret this later on? I could have the forward-thinking charata of, am I going to regret this later on? Maybe I want to avoid my kaas now because I might regret it later. But the best level, the highest level, the level of tzaddikim, is to recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running the show, that God's the one who's making all this happen. And so, like, what do I have to get upset about? God's in charge, and God knows what he's doing. Maybe we could add a couple things. We got a couple stories now. Most of our Tolkien is out, but I think the stories actually emphasize the Tolkien even more. We'll share three. One is a story of Leib Eger that I really do think that we told, but we're going to review quickly. We're not going to embellish it so much, but Leib Eger was the Tolkien Litvak. He was the grandson of Rabbi Akiva Eger, and so he is all halacha, halacha, halacha. And so one Yom Kippur, he's in Kutz because he wants to explore Hasidus, and the Kutzkers and the Hasidim wanted to mess with him a little bit. And so I go over to him during the break, and this is the lighter story. I tell a more intense one when I'm giving a drasha or something. They come over to him during the break, and they take out a bottle of schnapps. They lay out a few glasses, and they're like, Reb Leibel, let's have a shot. And he's like, guys, what do you mean? He's like, come on, let's have a shot. Like, it's Yom Kippur. You can't do that. And they're like, yeah. Who says I can't do that on Yom Kippur? And he's like, I'm learning the halakos right here. You look at the Shulchan Aruch. Very, very clear. You're not allowed to eat or drink on Yom Kippur. They're like, yeah, but that's not what he means. This is not eating Yom Kippur. This is gonna bring us a geschmack. This is gonna make our tefillos even better. Just like one little shot. And so they start to pour. And he's like, guys, like, you know, it's not just Shulchan Aruch. You look at the Rambam is very clear that you're not allowed to eat on Yom Kippur. There are five inuim on Yom Kippur. You're not allowed to eat or drink on Yom Kippur. Don't worry so much. And now everyone's got a shot in their hands. There's one in front of him and the three guys around him. And Reb Leibel is starting to get a little worked up. And this is also a good story about anger, I go. And he's getting a little worked up. And he's like, guys, you can't eat on Yom Kippur. Look at the Torah. The Torah says you're going to get kares. You're going to get cut off from the Jewish people if you eat on Yom Kippur. And they say, don't worry so much. They pat him on the back, and they pick up the coast, and they start to make a bracha. And they say, Baruch! And they say, Ata! And now Reb Leibel is freaking out. He knows halakha. He knows what's supposed to happen. He knows you're not allowed to eat or drink on Yom Kippur. But these Hasidim don't seem to understand. So he slams his hand on the table, and he says, you're not allowed to eat on Yom Kippur! HaKadosh Baruch Hu says not to eat on Yom Kippur! And then the Hasidim stop. And they smile. And they say,
Now he gets it. Why don't we read on Yom Kippur? It's not because of the Shulchan Aruch. It's not because of the Rambam. It's not because the Torah says it. We don't eat on Yom Kippur because the Kadosh Baruch Hu said so. And if a Kadosh Baruch Hu says so, that's the connection that Reb Leibel needed to learn as far as the Hasidim were concerned. But for us, when a Kadosh Baruch Hu says don't eat on Yom Kippur, I can eat, make sure I don't eat on Yom Kippur. But what if there were Hasidim egging us on to get angry? And Reb Leibel was sitting next to us saying, Kadosh Baruch Hu says don't get upset. Kadosh Baruch Hu says don't get angry. Maybe I would feel a little differently. Maybe it's like eating on Yom Kippur. If we thought about it like that, maybe I wouldn't get so upset. And that's Aleph. That's level one. That's how Hasid. That's how Hasidim, pious people, not you know, cultural Hasidim, but really pious people. That's how they approach it. That's how they think about getting upset. That I'm not going to because God doesn't want me to. That's why you can have a story with Moshe Feinstein. We're throwing another story in. Sorry, where he got a brand new set of shas and it's beautiful and he's learning from it. And he stepped away for a moment for whatever reason. And one of the boys in MTJ wanted to see the shas, and so he went over and accidentally spilled onto the Gemara, and he totally stained one of the pages. It was unusable. And he's freaking out. And Ramosha comes back, and he sits down, sees that someone spilled everywhere, smiles, and just keeps going. And it, because for Ramosha it was so clear, Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want me to get upset, so I'm not going to get upset. You don't. There's nothing else needs to happen. We see a story down here. A student of the Chabad Chaim, Rav Ben Sion Green Pass, Zechariah Levracha, that one time he sees the Chabad Chaim crying. He says, Rabbi, why are you crying? He says, I just learned the Sefer Reishis Chachma, and the Sefer Reishis Chachma says that ki misha yesh lo bizyonos be'olam hazeh, someone who's embarrassed in this world, moridin lo harbe me'onash ha'gehenim shemagia lo. If I'm embarrassed in this world, that someone is doing something to embarrass me or to anger me, then a lot of my Gehenim goes away. It's just like, you know, something could, God forbid, destroy my schar in Olam Haba. It could also destroy my onshim in this world, in the next world, by suffering in this world. Ki miskaper ma'avonosav. V'ata ani yoshev umudag uboka alatzmi. And the Chavetz Chaim is sitting there crying. He's so upset. Why? Lamha nisho simen hashemayim she'en li bizyonos. How come I never get insulted? Why don't I ever get upset? And so on the one hand, you could say the Chavetz Chaim is such a tzaddik that he wants God to send people to embarrass him. You could also say the Chavetz Chaim was such a tzaddik that he didn't get upset. He never felt like he was experiencing any bizyonos because it's not how he operates. It's not how he lived. That's a story from the Osur Tzatorah on the Yom Nirayim, page Kuf Nun Hey. I forgot to put it on the source sheet. But our last story is a little bit longer, and if anyone needs to run, I apologize, but this story is worthwhile. And this is the last piece in Orchot Tzadikim. That it's worth not feeling any pain, because if someone is able to maintain, if someone's able to not be get upset, they're not going to get fired up, then the Pasuk in Shoftim says, V'ohavav kitzeis Hashemes kigvuroso, like the Gemara in Shabbos explains. And the way that we have it translated here, I don't think is actually accurate. We say here that those that love a Kadosh Baruch Hu are like the sun, that he goes forth in his strength. I don't know what that means. What it says is that a Kadosh Baruch Hu loves people who love him. A Kadosh Baruch Hu treats them like the sun. The sun is a source of bracha, of blessing. The sun gives positivity to the world. And when a Kadosh Baruch Hu loves you, when you are someone that a Kadosh Baruch Hu can love, then God gives you blessings. And the number one reason to not get angry, the number reason not to get upset, is because it gives you a koach bracha. That when you're insulted and you don't respond, there is no greater koach bracha than that. And there are countless stories. We're just going to tell one. But really, you can look in like any of these storybooks and you'll find some example. But this is a story about Little Meir. Little Meir's mother was sick, and he was trying to figure out what he could do to provide a schus for his mother. And he talks to his principal, and his principal tells him, you know, you can give tzedakah. And so Little Meir brings in his winter coat. And the principal tries to get him to stop, but he says, no, I want to give my winter coat. And it checked out with Dad, and okay, fine. So he gives his winter coat. But now Meir's not wearing his winter coat. He's wearing his big brother's winter coat, the old one, the hand-me-down. And so he's walking around in a coat that's two sizes too big, and it's a little bit disheveled because it's passed through like four or five of his brothers. And Meir's walking, and he sees a bunch of the other boys his age. And they start making fun of him. And they start calling him names because he's wearing a coat that's nearly not befitting of him. And they're calling him a beggar, and they're making jokes at his expense. And he's not feeling so good. He's not feeling so happy. And then he notices that the boy leading the pack, this boy named Elazar, Elazar is wearing a nice looking coat, but he recognizes the coat. It's the same coat that Mayor gave up. Mayor gave up a coat to save his mother, to bring Squeals to his mother, and now that jerk is wearing his coat. So, now that's like the best response you could ever come up with. Elazar's making fun of me, and I can point out that Elazar's wearing a coat from Goodwill. Oh my gosh. This is the Gamach coat. Elazar, you're more pathetic than I am. I donated that coat to you. But what does Mayor say? He thinks about it and he says, "That I'm not going to. That's too much. That is too mean. It's not worth it. Everyone in school is going to hear about it. I don't want to put Elazar through that. I'm going to let it pass." And the principal sees this whole interaction. And, you know, he yells at Elazar. He punishes him effectively. But then he calls little Mayor into his office. He says, "Mayor, why didn't you say anything?" Mayor says, I wanted to tell him." The principal recognized that Elazar was wearing Mayor's coat. He'd examined the coat beforehand. He saw what the coat was. He totally appreciated the whole situation. He saw the whole story happening. And Mayor says, I couldn't embarrass him. I didn't want to put him through that." The principal says, "Look, I can't promise you that your mother's going to get better. But I can tell you that one of the greatest sources of bracha that a person has is when they're insulted and they don't respond." And sure enough, because it's a good story, Mayor's mother gets better over the course of the next 2 or 3 months. And to appreciate, I've never been in a situation, I've never been in a situation where I've been so embarrassed where I could have held back and not responded. It doesn't happen to most of us. We hang out with people who are generally nice people, nice enough that this kind of thing doesn't take place. But to develop the kind of personality where I could not do that, maybe just becoming that kind of person is someone worthy of giving a bracha. To be Mishas Maisa in that situation, it's something that we kind of can't picture. It's too extreme, it's too intense. But we want to get to that point. We want to get to that place. We want to think about the fact that Kodesh Baruch is really the one that runs the show, and that anything that's happening is really, really his plan. And so I'm not going to get upset. And then we're going to remember the Rambam. Now, the Rambam tells us that it's one of the worst midos. And the Ramban tells us it's one of the worst midos. And we want to stay far away from it. It's like worshiping Avodah Zarah, because you're attributing the way of the world running not to some entity other than a Kodesh Baruch, or maybe even to myself, Chas V'Shalom. And so we really see what a person gets angry about. We see what they care about by the expression of their anger, whether because they're not so refined and they genuinely get angry, or even if they are refined, what are they choosing? What are the priorities? What do they want to emphasize to other people, that these are the things that are most important they get upset about? And if ultimately our goal is to be a shining light in the world, like we started out in the beginning of our shiurim, if I want to be a positive influence on society, then I have to be someone who doesn't get upset, so people take me seriously, so people care what I'm saying, they care about my advice. And if I do get angry, but I don't want to express that, like we said, we've got a 24-hour rule from Rabbi Michal Brodsky, that I'm going to wait 24 hours. I'm not going to let it all blare out right in the beginning. Because ultimately, when we think about the contrast of anger versus harata, I don't want to have regrets. I want my haratos to be sources of growth and strength for me. I want to be secure enough in myself that I can feel harata, but I don't want to look back and regret the anger that I expressed. I don't want to look back and regret the mitzvot that I performed, like we say in Maariv every night, Vaaser Tzatzah Milfaneinu Me'achareinu. And I think that's enough of a summary for tonight. I'm happy to field any questions, but if not, then thank you so much, and have a wonderful evening.